Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. It is October the 26th. Welcome to the show. I'm very happy that you're here. And if you would like to support the podcast, consider throwing a few bucks in the tip jar. Head over to patreon.com/the Mind and Fitness Podcast. There's nearly 24 people from all over the world that contribute each month to help continue keeping this thing on the air for you for free. Going back, crazy. It'll be her 5-year anniversary is coming up in just a few weeks, is Barb. And also Arnie's 5-year anniversary is coming up here very soon. I very much appreciate you. And Sarah, Brian, Julie, Christina, Michael, Tony, Kelly, Irina, Mindy, Jason, John, Dominic, Elise, Emily, Daniel, Deborah, Julie, Jeff, Albert, Teresa, and Mary. Thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast. And a familiar name, Deb, was my podcast guest this week. We recorded. It's amazing. She's in her 70s. She's an athlete. She does triathlon. She does cross country. And she was wheelchair bound not all that long ago. So I'm excited for you to hear her story. Really amazing stuff. And it really certainly hammers home the whole idea that age is definitely just a number. I wanted to touch base too. Just about something that has just been eating at me a little bit for the last few days. I coach girls soccer, as you know. The girls have been playing marvelously for 5-6 weeks now. And we came into the weekend. Well, we won 2 in a row. And then we had our bye. And it was sort of awful time to have a bye because a week off when you're playing so well almost like kind of messes up the mojo. We went into Saturday. We were kind of getting crushed 3-0. And then we came back to get it, to make it 3-2. And then there was some logistics stuff at the end. We ended up still losing the game. But the next day, we lost 6-1. And though we lost, I think we actually won because I observed the attitudes of the girls and the cheering and the hype women that they were being for each other. And they were chanting and cheering for each other with 2 minutes to go in the game. The other team wasn't doing that at all. The other team wasn't cheering on their fellow teammates at all. It was just all do or die for the other team. And despite being down 6-1, you saw this group of 8- and 9-year-old girls just pouring their whole heart out. And I couldn't be more proud of them. So, but still feeling like there's disappointment coming from people that are watching the game, a couple of parents, that kind of thing. And it's amazing. It's one of those things where we can beat ourselves up a lot over the opinion of a couple, even if the overwhelming majority has something good to say. That's just the way that it is, I guess. That's just the way that it is. But I am titling this, "The thing that healed me the most was physical activity." That is the story of Deb Bliss, and she's from upstate New York, and I'm excited for you to hear her story. Check out me and Deb. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein, and I have a patron with me today, which is always awesome, and I've loved kind of hearing her stories over the last couple of years, but Deb Bliss, who joins us from upstate New York, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Thank you for being here. Before we kind of dive into the history, tell me about the athletic pursuits. If you're comfortable saying age as well, I think it's awesome. I think your story is awesome. So what kind of things do you do athletically now, if you don't mind giving some of that up first?
Sure. I will just start by saying that yesterday I had a fantastic cross-country running race. It was rainy. It was 40 degrees. It was a driving wind. The course was sloppy and muddy and icky, and I had a wonderful time running through the fields and woods, feeling like I was enjoying running, like yeah. Somehow my body knew how to run. and I was so happy and grateful that I'm still able to do this at the age of 76.
That's amazing.
With no pain.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So I like that.
Yeah, I love that too.
So I'm happy today. And cross country is one of the sports I like. And the other, my main sport, you have to say, is triathlon.
Okay.
Which is swim, bike, and run. The distance that I like to do is a 1-mile swim followed by a 25-mile bike ride and then a 10K or a 6-mile run. So that is my major sport.
Awesome. When was the last triathlon you did?
Just 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
Two or three weeks ago, I competed in the World Triathlon Age Group Championships.
That's awesome.
In Pontevedra, Spain, which was, it had been a driving goal of mine for years.
That's awesome.
And I did it.
Did you
it
finish?
Fun.
You did you?
Yeah,
finish?
I did.
That's awesome.
I finished.
That's so cool.
I finished. I had a wonderful time, and was third in my age group of 77. I'm 76 years old, by the way, and there were quite a number of women over the age of 70 competing.
That is awesome. I'm curious at that age, because, you know, I don't have experience as a 76-year-old competing in anything. However, I do have experience competing in general in my 20s and in my 30s. And the 30-year-old men are very intense about a lot of things. And when I would see some of them in the warm-up area or whatever, at some of the various things that I would be competing in, you're looking at, some guys are taking it way seriously. Some people are there just to have fun. Like, what's kind of the breakup of the demographic when you're in that age range? Are there people that are still, you know, Rocky Balboa world beaters, or is everybody just kind of there and it's like, hey man, I've been around the block and I'm just here to have a good time?
There are both. And I have to say that prior to my big TMS abyss, which was just about exactly 2 years ago, I was in the do or die category. I wanted to win. I needed to win.
Yeah.
The world. I needed to be the best in the world.
Yep.
And but with the things that I've learned from all that I've done with my TMS journey, now I see, and there are still women in the age group, in my age group. Yeah, I could tell you talking. That's what they want, to win. But my feeling now is the people that I'm competing against are not my adversaries. They are actually my teammates.
Yeah.
And all of us, our adversary is, you know, Father Time, if you will. And it used to be that there are people that I know that are faster than me. And I'd be so happy if they didn't show up to a big race. 'Cause that let me, you know, rank better. But now my feeling is if they don't show up, I'm a little bit worried about them.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, you know, stuff happens at this age. And the people are precious. So, you know, that's a completely different attitude than I used to have.
One thing that I have learned is that there's very few people on earth that can't say, hey, there's somebody else that's better than me or stronger than me or faster than me. Like, there's very few people on earth that have the ability to say that they are truly the best or fastest or strongest in whatever their field is. So that's one thing that most of us, 99.99999% of us, can always say, is that somebody is going to be faster or better than us at something.
You know, when in all this, and I never spent my life as an introspective person. I was always action oriented, yeah, problem solving. But I was forced by 2 years ago, I couldn't walk without a walker.
Wow.
And that was due completely to what was going on inside of me. And one of the things that I figured out was that, as a child, I was not accepted for who or what I was. You know, I was gender nonconforming. I was very athletic in a non-athletic family. And I had there were no opportunities for sports for girls back then. And I finally found approval when I got to high school by achievement. By being the best academically, I could do that. And so that became a really important part of my need to be the best. And that's something that understanding it I can, you know, every now and then I stop myself. I have to stop myself. But no, that's as you say, no, that's not true. There, I'll never be. I cannot control anybody. I can control my training.
Yeah.
I can control how hard I train. I can control what I bring to an event, the attitude I bring, the equipment that I bring, but I cannot control that other person's training or whether they had swimming lessons as a child or, you know, anything about them. So it's really stupid to worry about being the best.
Yep.
I can only control myself.
I'm curious on this, and we can kind of choose where we want to go, but you said 2 years ago you couldn't walk without a walker. And, you know, there's probably a lot of younger, like I get the analytics of the demographics that listen to this podcast. There are a lot of people in that 19 to 30 year old demo that listen to this. And they may think that, hey, a 74-year-old with a walker is normal. That would be dead bliss normal. Talk about that. Talk about the perspective on, because like my dad is 73, but to me he's still 40 years old. I feel like he's been 40 for 33 years. Just in how I see him. Talk a little bit about that. What was going on 2 years ago? Talk a little bit about what was going on 2 years ago.
Well, you've asked two questions, so but I'll talk about what was going on 2 years ago.
Sure.
Well, first of all, I'll mention that in 2017, that was 6 years ago, I had a bike accident and I broke my hip. That was a real injury. I was really in the hospital in great pain, and I broke it, by the way. I was on my way to my first national competition, which was a big deal.
Wow.
To me. And I had, of course, I wasn't competing. I'm not literally on my way. I was training for it. I was a month away. Okay, so I was determined to get back to that national competition the following year. I was doing pull-ups while I was still sitting in my wheelchair and, you know, gung-ho. And sure enough, made it to that national competition in 2018. And then qualified for Worlds in 2019, which was really my goal. And then what happened in early 2019, I had my hip, this was my left hip, I experienced the same pain. I couldn't walk. I went to the doctor. He x-rayed it. He saw a pelvic stress fracture, but he was scratching his head because the stress fracture was on the other side, was on the right side, and it was very minor. Uh-huh. Nevertheless, it was, you know, physical therapy and rest and relaxation and blah, blah, blah. And again, it took me a long time to work my way back with a lot of hip pain. And I did go to Worlds in 2019. So that was all good. Then in 2020 was great. I had no competitions and no injuries, although I did all my races on the road in front of my house and in my own pond. I just did them virtually, but that was very interesting. But anyway, 2021, I had two big national competitions. And starting the beginning of the year, I started getting that same hip pain on and off and on and off, physical therapy, tons of prehab before every workout, but it was kind of manageable. Did one national competition at one distance, qualified for Worlds, but the Worlds was going to be in Abu Dhabi. I did not want to go there, so I was doing a second national competition at a longer distance, twice the distance that I usually do. And I started getting more and more and more pain. And I was probably the only athlete ever to get out of bed using a cane and then go do a 70-mile triathlon.
Wow.
I was in pain, but I was fine. And then I drove home from New Jersey, felt fine. It was all great. And then the next day, or that very day, my brother, who I kind of take care of, he was doing his grocery shopping. He's got some Alzheimer's going on. And he calls me. He's in great pain. I got to go to the ER with him. He's admitted. He's totally delusional. And all of a sudden, and the next day, I can't get out of bed. So, I have all of a sudden become responsible for another person's life,
yep.
A person I don't actually like that much. And, you know, you want to talk about the inner child not liking this. And that's what happened. In addition to that, this was like a perfect storm. In addition to that, so I was researching Abu Dhabi to see, well, you know, maybe I might go there after all. And I did actually win that long course competition. I was the only one. I was 20 years older than the next person, you know, the next oldest person. But, and I found that the situation in Abu Dhabi was, it just made me furious that the National Triathlon Organization would agree to take, or the World Triathlon would have, you know, a big event there, because people who are gender nonconforming are criminals in Abu Dhabi. And I still am gender nonconforming. You know, I'm married with children, but I'm often misgendered, and overseas I'm misgendered 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many, many, many athletes who are LGBTQ who also would not feel comfortable in Abu Dhabi. I raised a ruckus with the United States Triathlon, USA Triathlon. And then I came to understand, I mean, I was in a fury. I was in a red hot fury. I have never been so angry in my life. And this was on top of all this anger and having to take care of my brother. And all of these things contributed to the fact that I couldn't walk. I could not walk. So anyway, I went to the doctor, more x-rays, a little bit of necrosis from that broken hip. That's what I was afraid of. And, oh, he sent me to a surgeon, and I was fearing a hip replacement. And,
yeah.
You know, necrosis is when your bone dies. And of course, if the surgeon had said, well, yeah, you need a hip replacement, I would have done it. I was very unhappy about that, because I just spent, you know, all this other time recovering. And fortunately from in the surgeon, he comes in, he's all but like sharpening his scalpels, because that's what he does, hip replacements, you know. But he looked at the x-rays and he said, nah, you're not bad enough to need that. Go home. And he literally said, no, you don't hurt bad enough. So go home.
Yeah.
So I had nothing to do. I mean, there was no, you know, physical therapy or whatever, acupuncture or whatever. It just put me into a pit of depression, because I love physical activity and I could not do it. But anyway, I started. That was in the fall. That was in October, November, after Thanksgiving. I started walking. And I was taking care of my daughter's dog, who needed to be walked. He had a knee problem of his own. He needed walking several times a day. So I had to take him. I had to walk. And I started to run. I was determined to get back into running. And I would run for 5 seconds and walk for 55 and repeat that over and over. And I would do that. And I went on like that till March, increasing my walking time, my running time. And in March, I happened to read an article by somebody who had been saved by Dr. Sarno. And he, you know, just this article described his experience, and I said, well, that's me.
That quick,
so
huh?
I meet that. Oh, yeah. I said, that's me. That is me all the way. So I ordered his books, and I think I ordered one by Dr. Schubiner, his Unlearn Your Pain, and got started right away. Well, the interesting thing was that as soon as I did that, I couldn't run at all. I was back to square one. And that went on for a couple of weeks. And then I started, I started to run a little bit. And I had, I don't know what I was doing, but I discovered some information about the inner child. And I understood that somehow my inner child was furious, and that's what was causing my distress. So I started to run again, and then I got vertigo. And I got vertigo like two or three times within a couple of weeks. And vertigo, let me tell you, when you have vertigo, you can't do anything but lie down flat.
Yeah.
And so I started like yelling at my inner child, like, this is not fair. You know, if your hip hurts, when my hip hurts, I can at least walk. But vertigo, yeah, I'm helpless. And then I had the most, I want to share this experience with your listeners. They talk about the unconscious mind and it being like so much of your mind is unconscious and you can't really experience it. Well, I experienced my unconscious at that moment when I was attacking my inner child. It is an immense power. So I can't even describe, like, well, you know, it's 10 times or 100 times as powerful as your mind. It's this huge, huge power. And it was very frightening. And I could only say, if I come up against you, I'm going to lose. And that was not a healing moment. But in retrospect, that's an understanding moment, because I understand that is the force. It was protecting my inner child. I was yelling at my inner child.
Yep.
It was protecting that child. And all along in my childhood, and all the, you know, all the times I didn't never thought of myself as being traumatized, but I was traumatized. There's nothing a parent can do that's more traumatic than to their child than not accepting them for what they are, not letting them develop or grow as they are, and always telling them that they are not acceptable. That is the worst thing I think you can do to a child. But anyway, and there was this huge unconscious that was just, yep, I'll take that feeling. Yep, that'll, you know, we'll hang on to that for the next 70 years. But it, you know, it started to leak, and it wanted to come out, and especially triggered by these things like my conflict over, you know, the USAT's policy toward nonconforming athletes and having to caretake my brother. It was coming out, and that was an amazing experience.
What
so anyway,
and this is the vertigo is going on at this time. Is that right?
I had vertigo. Oh yeah. Back to my healing story. This is great. So I was having vertigo, I think 3 times in 2 weeks. And then I got COVID and it was very mild, lasted me about a week. I got the Paxlovid, and all the pain in my left hip went away overnight. And which had led me to believe that, well, either my mind now had something bigger to distract it, and or I had been really, really afraid during the pandemic and had been repressing that fear.
Yeah.
And it now there was nothing to fear. However, then I developed pain in my right hip, in my other hip, and in my back. And But I signed up for races. I was still walking with a cane. I signed up for some shorter races because I said, you know, I'm going to get back.
And at this point, you've read Sarno, you've read Schubiner, you know what's going on, right? Like when this stuff, when you're getting this symptom imperative thing.
Yes. Yes.
And so what was your like initial, because it does take some practice. What's your initial gut reaction? Is it fear? Is it, I'm not gonna be able to, I mean, I know you said that you continued on whether it was with the cane or not, but like, did you have even a momentary fear or just, nope, I'm doing it?
No, I had no fear. One of the first things when I started, one of the first tools I used was, what's his name? The wiki guy, Alan Gordon's thing. And, so I would listen to his daily lesson and then go for my walk. And one of his lessons was, well, you can't hurt your body. So I knew that even though it hurt, I could not hurt. Even though it might hurt, I was not damaging my body. So I could continue to push through a certain amount of pain. But by this time, I knew, you know, I was so deconditioned, it was going to take a long time to get back to where I wanted to be.
Yep.
But I was going to get there. I should mention some of the other things that I used besides Schubiner that were very impactful. One was Schubiner. If you buy his book, you get access to his meditations.
Yeah.
I use that. So I would do that daily. The one where you, and I still do it. I still do where you do breathing, you get in a calm place and then you feel an emotion, something that's going to bother you or has bothered you in the past, and you really allow yourself to feel it. And then after a brief period of time, he talks you out of that, you back up to the breathing and the warm, safe place. And I used that so much. Another resource I used was Hanscom's book, Back in Control.
Yeah.
And especially he recommended the book, Fred Luskin's work on Forgive for Good.
He recommended that book. I can't remember if it was the first podcast him and I recorded or the second one. Did you hear about that book in that interview, or that's just a coincidence?
That's a coincidence. Okay. I read the book.
Okay.
And I was listening to your podcast. You were also somebody that I started listening to right away. And always learn from your podcast,
that's
by
awesome.
The way. Something. So I want to add some of the other healing things I used.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them is this whole relationship with my inner child. And I got a technique. One of the things I did, Dr. Schubiner also offers an online course in conjunction with Hal Greenberg, which I took because, man, I was throwing everything at this thing. I knew what it was, and I was throwing everything at it. And Greenberg, in one of his things, described how you can use non-dominant handwriting to access your inner child, to talk to your inner child. Now, I was already doing journaling, trying to, you know, expressive writing. And so what you do is you start writing, you know, how you're feeling, you know, or whatever. And then especially you might have maybe you're feeling tense about something. Maybe you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And so you ask your inner child, well, what are you thinking? And then you put the pen or pencil in your other hand, your left hand if you're right-handed, and you start writing, or hand scratching is what it looks like. And the stuff that comes out can be incredible. I have gotten so many insights, essential insights into stuff from my childhood that I had thought nothing of. And some days there's nothing profound, but you know, we just, like with a friend, you talk and then you say you love, you know, I love you, and they answer they love you, and which is like loving yourself, which is something we all need more of. Or you know, maybe you just sing a song together, recite poetry. But sometimes stuff comes out. I'll tell you one thing. I know we're getting too long, but recently I noticed I was having trouble going to bed. I always delay going to bed. I sit downstairs. I don't want to go upstairs. I don't know why. I'm tired. I need my sleep. So I said, I'm going to ask little Debbie. And so we're talking. And so what? I put the pencil in my left hand, and she starts writing. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And if I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. And I had this memory of me and my brothers kneeling down, saying that prayer every night before going to bed. What an awful, a terrible thought to put in the mind of like a 3-year-old. You're going to die before you wake. What the heck?
Yeah.
I never would have thought of that. And, you know, I'm 76-year-old, you know, dying is not such a hypothetical proposition anymore. So together we rewrote that poem, you know, like, now I lay me down to sleep, long and lovely, dark and deep. And if I die before I wake, it's okay. I've had my cake. And so we wrote that and laughed about it. But I never would have, I never would have dreamed, would have connected that whole dying thing with what I experience in the here and now. So anyway, so that is a one, and you can Google on non-dominant handwriting. I mean, it's a thing.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, I gotta sip some water. So the other thing, the other technique I learned, or the other insight, wait a minute. When I started swimming, I discovered not only did I not swim very well, but I was afraid. I was frightened. I would have panic attacks. Excuse me. And a swimming teacher I had at the time, named Shane Eversfield, he wrote a book, Zendurance. And what he said was, of course, when you put your face in the water, you're going to be anxious. You got your face in the water. You don't breathe water. But that's like a keyhole. And then your other anxieties can be like, your other fears can come creeping through that keyhole. If your fear is disproportionate to, like, yeah, anxiety, your face in the water, look inside and find what the things are that you're really afraid of, because they're sneaking out that keyhole.
Yeah.
And that holds true on so many, so many, so many occasions where, things normally, you know, you'll have normal anxiety. You're going to take part in the race, you know? Of course you're nervous. But what are the things you're really afraid of? Well, you're afraid of that feeling, yeah, I don't belong here. I got no business here. I'm an imposter. And people are going to laugh at me. You got to deal with the underlying fears but accept the fact that, yeah, things are going to, you know, a certain amount of anxiety is normal. But if it's blown out of proportion, you got something else going on.
Yep. Yep.
So
what's one thing I'm curious to get your take on? We touched on it on the very beginning of this, but your training for, you know, pre-awakened Deb versus post-awakened Deb. What does that look like? How do you approach training? How do you approach competition? How has that evolved over time? And how have some of these life lessons been able to just, you know, shift the way that you kind of even go about your daily life and your relationships?
Well, one is being aware of perfectionism. You know, Perfectionism is a useful tool in certain things. You know, if you're packing for a race, it's good not to forget anything at all. But it also can really hamper you if when you do something imperfectly or you forget something, you don't start attacking yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that you know, as you said recently, as you brought up, it'll be all right.
Yep.
It'll be all right. You know, whatever. It'll be all right. You know, if you've made a mistake, it'll be all right. If it rains, it'll be all right. So not, you know, still being diligent, but not, but controlling that perfectionism or using it, but not letting it take control. And the same goes with like following my training schedule. I've got a coach, you know, I used to just be, if I didn't follow the workouts to a T, you know, that was like really wrong, but now I don't, I pretty much do, but if I got to change it or skip it or something, I don't. So I guess the gist of that is I'm not so hard on myself. And the other thing that's changed is, and I think through experience, is that I'm not an imposter. You know, I had the experience when I was doing this race and this world race. This is really fun because they start the old people first. So you're always being passed on the bike by young people. And yep. You got these young people going whizzing by you all the time. You really feel like you're part of a bike, of something big and fast. And you get to be a part of it. And I was, you know, this was a hard bike. And you go up a big hill, and then I was going down a big hill and going fast, and all these fast people going by me. And I'm saying, you know, by God, Deb, you really are a hell of an athlete.
Yeah.
And I think that understanding, it was a breakthrough. It was a mental breakthrough that I did belong there. I'm not the little weak girl trying to keep up with her big brothers. You know, I really am that. And I really do belong there. And I really can own that, as who I am.
That's awesome. When do you compete again?
Well, I'm doing this cross country season that's got, two more races this fall in a couple, you know, they're a couple of weeks apart. That's so much fun. I love it.
Yeah.
And
you live in the Northeast and you just do it. I mean, like when I think of upstate New York, I think of Buffalo and I think of like, I just think of mountains of snow from like correct me if I'm wrong, November 1st to like March 1st. Am I totally wrong when I say that?
I would say not so much anymore.
Okay. Wow. All right.
I mean, Buffalo. Yeah. We usually are running and this, some of these races, the cross country races, the ones at the end, it's not at all unusual to be running in snow. And that's part of what makes it fun.
Yeah.
And they're cold. But it's a team, you know, that's one thing I love about it. There's a team. You're not just running for yourself. You're contributing to your team and there's camaraderie. And we travel all around upstate New York, Buffalo. We also, you know, we run at Buffalo and Rochester and Syracuse.
Have you thought about, so there was somebody I interviewed on here a couple of times, Lisa Schlossberg, and she's done a couple of the Ragnar races. Have you thought about doing something like that?
Yeah, I did listen to her. But I don't remember what the Ragnar is.
So you should check it out. They have got to have age divisions. They have to. But when you're talking about the team camaraderie, and it's a running event, but let's say that, you know, the whole team has to run, like a team of five has to run 40 miles or 50 miles, or like it's something, it's a lot. But But you're running it. It's a 24-hour continuous thing. So like if four of you are on a team, you know, you might take a 2-hour shift at two in the morning, and then you sleep in a van and the van follows, and then you meet at another spot. And like it seems like it's one of the, I mean, I'm not a runner. I did a half marathon in 2012, and but I haven't been a runner since. That is something that I would come out of running retirement to do, because I think it sounds awesome to do.
Well, we have a similar race here that is it's called the Seneca Seven, and you go around Seneca Lake, and there's seven people on your team, and you got the van and all the rest, and I always want to do it, but then I start to think about what it's really going to be like, which is a lot of sleep deprivation.
Yeah, that's true.
So you don't sleep in a van, So I don't do that. I'm not big on sleep deprivation, but maybe so.
Deb, this has been fun. Thank you for being here. Thank you for telling us a little bit more about it. Just thanks for being here. Any final thoughts or anything before we get going?
Yes, I'll say this is that the thing that healed me most mentally was physical activity. And, I read people on the Facebook group and whatnot, and I just like to say, you know, take a walk.
Yeah.
Start running.
Yep.
Get a bike.
Yep.
Do these things. If it hurts a little bit, that's okay. You're not hurting your body.
Yeah.
You're not harming yourself. And, it's just of such benefit.
I mean, you know me, that's, I always say that's kind of like rule number one is going and doing that. So, Deb, thanks for being here. I'm excited for everybody to hear this, and we'll chat soon. Keep in touch.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Take care. Bye.
Yep. Bye.